The expressed views of the guests on this podcast are theirs alone and not necessarily endorsed by the host, TWBC, or any associated sponsor. Conversations that are robust yet balanced, on point and to the point. You are listening to The Talk of Tournament Water Ski. This is the TWBC podcast. And now, here's your host, Tony Lightfoot.
Well, greetings one and all, and welcome to this latest edition of the TWBC podcast. Festive greetings to all of you out there, and thanks a lot for your support once again. All right there. So this past summer, one of the highlights of the season, in a season that is so festooned with highlights and great performances and great people ascending to the great heights of world championship competition. I bring to you one of those competitors, the U21 World Women's Trick Champion. She comes to us from Canada. Her name is Hannah Stopniecki. How are you doing, Hannah?
Hi, I'm good, thanks. How are you, Tony?
Doing good, doing good. So, festive time of year. You come to us from Canada. You were actually talking to me from somewhere in deepest Quebec in Canada, but you don't spend an awful lot of time in Canada. I mean, you're actually a student over in Rollins College, from what I understand. Is that correct?
Yeah, I haven't spent a lot of time in Canada the last few years, but I did grow up here. I spent the first 15 or so years of my life here pretty much all the time. Yeah, I've gotten to have some warmer weather and some better ski conditions the last few years, but it's nice to be back visiting family and seeing some snow again.
Excellent, excellent. So your route into the sport of tournament water skiing is a little different from the stories that I typically hear in other stories, other podcast episodes, but kind of give us a brief rundown as to how you got started in the sport, and who your biggest supporters were at that stage, and bring us up towards the present day.
Yeah, absolutely. So yes, it is a little bit different. A lot of my good friends and competitors seem to have their parents competed, and then they kind of started when they were super young, and that's how it went. And I heard the other day, I was talking to a friend, and he said to me, "So you basically became a competitive athlete by accident?" And actually, that pretty much sums it up. So I grew up water skiing recreationally on our country house lake up here in Canada. My dad did it recreationally before, and my whole family. So it was just something we did, for fun in the summers. And then we just happened to stumble upon Swiss Water Ski School in just outside of Orlando, Florida. And we would go there when I was little for, spring break and the typical holiday or school vacations. And then, eventually it was Clint Saddlebauer was my coach back then. And they were all so great to me over there. And there were a lot of pros, of course, skiing at Swiss. So it kind of just happened that I started to learn the slalom course, and now I'm a tricker, but I did grow up slalom skiing mostly. And then I went into a tournament. It was Quebec Provincials. That was my first tournament. And then that year I qualified for the Nationals, which I thought was like this massive deal, which it is. But now looking back, it's just kind of funny because, I mean, my dad was like, "What, the Nationals? That's insane." And then, from there I kept skiing and started competing a bit more, and made my first international team tournament in 2018. And then from there, it's really just been kind of growing. And about 5 years ago, I started skiing with Matt Rainey and Cole Grant, who are now my coaches today. And they've been so monumental in my success, and kind of the whole team over there, Whitney McClintock Marini was always like my idol, and now I'm happy to say she's one of my best friends. And everyone else there, Joel Poland, Paige Marini, Robert Pagosi, or I guess now it's Paige Pagosi, but yeah, all of them have been so wonderful and so important to my development. But of course, ever since I was little and now, and every day leading up to this, my parents have been kind of the most monumental factor, I guess.
All right, then. You mentioned there Matt Rainey in the equation. Obviously, monumental in terms of his involvement in your skiing and what have you, you know. So you've been training with him for what is it? I mean, you just mentioned the last 5 years. And, I mean, he must have imparted some quite memorable nuggets of information that you've taken on board What has been the most significant of those? You know, because he does come through the best that I can remember anyway, with a few analogies, you know, from time to time, you know, some comparisons to different sports and what have you, if my memory serves me right, you know.
Yeah.
But correct me if I'm wrong, but I mean, what's been your favorite amongst all of the stuff that he's imparted to you coaching wise?
Well, I could talk about everything I've learned from Matt for probably 24 hours straight. So to pick just one would be, you know, a challenge. One thing that we always talk about with Matt is he's got his magic wand. Somebody will come out to ski with him for the first time ever. And after, he won't say anything for the first pass. And then after a pass or two passes, he says one tiny little thing. And it's like he's waved his magic wand and the next pass is perfect, basically. Or not perfect, but, you know, a lot better. But and that comes through with so many different analogies, you know, depending on the event. He's one of the best coaches, in my opinion, the best coach in the world in all three events. But, you know, I have the most to say for trick. But apart from that, and, you know, all the different things and analogies he uses in, you know, technical skiing, I would say that the most important things I've learned from Matt are all mental. And his whole thing, and the thing that's most, you know, present at the Matt Rainey Water Ski School, is not just becoming a great skier, but becoming a great human. And that's what Matt does. He creates great humans. And that's something that I feel like I've learned so much, not just on the water, but, you know, as a person, as a friend, as a family member, as a student, like everything that I am, I feel like could be attributed. Of course, my parents played a huge part in that growing up, but in the last couple years, I've learned so much from him and everybody there.
Indeed, indeed. And I think a lot of those qualities about being a good human and, you know, and being, you know, true to yourself and all of that kind of stuff kind of came to the fore a little bit last summer, especially with the under 21 World Championships and the stuff that happened there. We'll talk a little bit about that as we go along with the podcast. But let's go from the beginning of this past season. What was your first tournament? I think it was it Swiss Pro Tricks, from what I understand, or did you miss out on that one?
No, Moomba, actually.
Moomba, yeah, Moomba, of course it is. I keep forgetting Moomba. Yeah. Anyway, yeah. Go right ahead.
Wow, all of that is a blur, actually. I feel like most present in my mind is the end of the season, so I have to think back. But Moomba, I can't actually even remember my score, which is why I always say, like, the mental and the experiences and everything you learn is so much more important than that. But I think at Moomba, it didn't go exactly as planned. I think I wasn't totally ready. And, yeah, I think I fell somewhere in my hand pass. Toes, actually, yeah. But I think back toes was really good. And then I fell somewhere in my hand pass. I didn't make Moomba finals. But, you know, that trip was really, really fun anyway. And then moving into Swiss Pro Trick, I think about the same. I was working towards a new run at that point, which is ended up being the run I used all season, but at that point it was very new. And so my reverse back landing just really wasn't consistent back then, and I fell on it. But, you know, I felt like I gave it my all, and I learned from that experience, and that's kind of what the beginning of the season is.
Yeah, I know.
And then moving...
I noticed that you actually put out some videos on Instagram with some of the attempts that you've had with the reverse back landing and trying to get those consistent, you know. So, I mean, So, I mean, that kind of emphasizes the what you said, that that in terms of having a focal point for the season and its success going forward, that was the main move that you were working on, the reverse, the Mo back landing reverse, I would say, at least from my perspective anyway. You may disagree or disagree.
No, I actually agree fully. I mean, that trick has been a roller coaster over the years. I had a minor concussion on it back when I was younger, and it really scared me. And so it was a process, and that's something that Matt and also Cole helped me so much with, you know, getting mentally back from that trick. And there was a lot of backflips and 180s to like, you know,
so partition spin.
Yeah, exactly. Kind of preps over the time. And then in the beginning of the season, I wasn't super, you know, lucky with it. But then towards the end, honestly, now it's pretty much, as you say, my Instagram, it's pretty much the trick I post the most, because now I love it. And, you know, I haven't skied in a little bit, but I'm excited to get back to it because that's probably my favorite trick these days.
Are you working on anything else or plan on working on anything else at the beginning of the season to kind of beef up your run a little bit?
Yeah, so I mentioned to you, but yeah, I'm heading down to Chile in only a couple of days. And, you know, usually the start of the season, January-ish, is kind of the time that I play around with everything and just kind of do, you know, ski for, not that I don't normally ski for fun, but not, I mean, I have a plan, of course, but, you know, try kind of everything and see where I'm at with everything. So I'll be trying both mobs probably and seeing how that goes. And then trying to make my way into doing front flip a little better. I was getting a little closer to it earlier in the summer, and then I stopped for a while. So yeah, I'll be working on probably those three tricks, and we'll see what goes into my run. It probably won't be those quite yet, but, you know, just doing bigger tricks and seeing where that goes.
Anything you plan on changing with toes, you know, reconfiguring the runs, maybe taking out one trick and spin, or maybe spinning up the rest to leave room for something maybe new on that pass, or are you going to leave it well enough alone?
You know, toes is one thing where I've been doing the same run for like 5 years, just adding tricks at the end as I get faster. And I feel like that's kind of the way it goes with especially the girls, because there's such a awesome run that's put together, you know, like toe seven through toe line back to back. But I think toes is just going to be about being more efficient and tightening things up and being safer and making everything extra credit, because that's always important. But, you know, I'll probably still work on some toe tricks, some newer toe tricks kind of for fun. And then those might come into play in a couple of years, but probably for the next season or two or three, I'll be focused on this run, because it's a great run and it scores relatively high without having to do anything too crazy.
Okay, so from that answer there, the takeaway that I got from that answer was that you tend to plan a little bit more on the long term. You see the long game. Probably better than most in that regards, you know, in regards to setting up for a potential beefed up pass that you could invoke in about a couple of seasons time. Does that sound about right?
Yeah, I mean, I try to make a very, you know, precise plan, but nothing ever really goes exactly to plan. I have goals, and I do find that I'm relatively good at goal setting. And that's something I've definitely learned from Matt and Cole and everyone else over there. But I definitely think about the future, and I work towards the future. I wouldn't say that I have I'm saying in 2028 I'm going to have this specific run, but I definitely have some aspirations. And, you know, of course, I look at the best pros runs, and I think to myself, it would be cool if I could do that. And I work towards doing that, and, you know, we see what happens.
All right. So you briefly mentioned just a few moments ago that you'll be on your way to Chile. I mean, you'll do all the Christmas festivities, and then I think it was either the day of or the day after you hop on a plane from Montreal over towards Santiago. I mean, you've skied at the place before, I know, because you competed there in the World Junior Championships, where you came out on top, you know. So I mean, obviously one of your favorite venues, Lago Los Moros, and so yeah. I mean, I'm just trying to find a question in there somewhere, but but I mean, how long has that trip been in the planning, or have you been kind of looking forward to it since last season, or even beforehand?
Yeah, so to answer your question, the first international tournament I ever competed in was at Miranda's down there, at Lago Los Moros. I think that's how you pronounce it.
Lago Los Moros.
And that was back in 2018. And then I returned there for the Pan Am Championships and for the Junior Worlds, as you mentioned, back in 2022-2023. And I spent probably over a month there that winter because of both of those tournaments being so close together. And I really enjoyed it. And then I've been kind of trying to go down to the Southern Hemisphere in January, February, December-ish at some point for a couple of weeks every winter since then. And last winter, I went back there to Chile. And it was back to Miranda's. And, you know, the Miranda family has been so welcoming. And I love skiing down there. And usually I train with Tangi Bennett around this time of year. So I'm excited to go do that and, you know, see all of my Chilean friends. And also I've got Tristan Duplant-Fribourg and Tim Wild are also going to be down there and their, mm-hmm. and his family. So it should be a fun trip. And, yeah.
Yes, indeed. You mentioned Tim Wilder just a moment ago, and I'll come back to him in a few minutes. But you also mentioned Tangi Bennett as well, whose coaching style differs a little bit in some ways to what is normally professed by Cole or by Matt Rainey, you know. So I mean, how do you kind of work that into your psyche a little bit?
Yeah, so that's something I like to do just for a couple of weeks a year. It's something different, but it's also something that I find helps me a lot. And I love all three. I've had so many coaches over the year, you know, people who have played a factor. I've skied with Boris Lavelle, I've skied with Jason McClintock, I've skied with so many people, but I've always heard of Tangi because he was kind of, in my mind, he was kind of this legend that I'd never met, but I've heard so many things about. And so then when I did meet him a few years back and I skied with him a little bit, it's something, again, like you said, really different, but at the same time, not all that different, because Tangi also is big on the mental side and making things fun, like Matt and Cole are all about making things fun and the mental side and becoming a good human. And I find that Tangi hits all of those points as well. So even if the coaching style is slightly different, I feel like I get the same things out of it. And it's definitely an experience I enjoy, but, you know, it's all good.
Indeed, indeed. So you mentioned that you'll be over in Chile. Tangi Bennett is going to be there. Tim Wilder, who you seem to have struck up a pretty decent friendship with. I'll leave it at that. You know, with Tim, and Tristan Duplant-Fribourg as well, who would ordinarily be training over at Travis's place in the off season, but goes to Santiago de Chile. So. Kind of tell us a little bit about how Tim Wilder's had had an impact upon your performances, you know, because I mean, there I mean, no matter what kind of skier you are, you know, you could, you're always in need of a good training partner. And I mean, in that respect, you know, Tim Vild would appear to tick all the boxes in that respect.
Yeah, definitely. So, as you said, we struck up a good friendship, but he is my boyfriend, and we have a lot of fun training together, and it makes things, you know, exciting, because of course we're rooting for each other and also trying to get better, and we have friendly little lighthearted competitions between each other on tricks, at least, because he way out shoots me in slalom and obviously jump. But I feel like we've done a really good job this season of rooting for each other and also staying focused on our own performances. Before tournaments, we're always training together and everything. He skis with Matt Rainey and Cole Grant as well, so he's kind of always around there. But then once we get to a tournament, we try to keep as separate as possible while still, you know, hanging out, because it's definitely, I'm just as nervous for him to ski as I am for myself, or maybe even more. So before, whenever we're skiing, you know, close to each other, we try to stay focused on ourselves. And then as soon as the tournament is over, then we celebrate together or console each other, whatever it may be, and hang out. And yeah, that's it. But he definitely has helped my performances over the last little while, because he's so focused and so disciplined and really in my court, so he's been a factor as well.
You hit upon focus, and certainly Tim Vild is definitely that, you know. I mean, that even extends to his father, Stefan Vild, who I've known for quite a few years, dating back to the days of the first Junior Worlds back in the late 1980s, you know. So I can definitely attest to his focus. But let's kind of go back a little bit upon the season. We stopped a little bit at Swiss Pro. What was your next tournament beyond that? That stage, yeah, of the season. So, not too sure whether you skied in the Masters, but although you've been to Robin Lake a few times before in the Junior Masters, but kind of get us caught up a little bit with where you were at that stage of the season right after Swiss Pro.
Yeah, absolutely. So I was going into the Masters qualifiers, and that was something that I was really, really looking forward to, but also actually quite nervous for. I've always wanted to, kind of a thought that I had in my head after I qualified for the Junior Masters the first time, was that the year after I'm out of juniors, I would qualify in pro. And I built this up so much in my head that I actually put way too much pressure on it. And because the 2 years before, I hadn't had to qualify in juniors, so I had already qualified before the LCQs. So it was kind of this big built up thing in my head. And I ended up just missing out on the Masters after the qualifiers, which at the time seemed quite heartbreaking. But I think that it put me in a position to realize, okay, I need to get better and kind of grind for the Worlds, which later helped a lot. But no, I didn't get to ski in the Masters, but I did go and watch, because I love Robin Lake and Callaway Gardens and Nautique and everything over there so much. And I wanted to support also Tim, who skied amazing in that tournament, and all of my other friends.
Plus, you would have been bored watching it at home.
Yeah, no, I would have been jealous, to be honest. I'm not a jealous person, but I would have been like, I don't think I would have been able to sit home and watch all of that.
All right, then. So we're at the Masters, you know. Then from there, the bulk of your season kind of opens up a little bit. You have a little bit. Did you go to the San Gervasio this season or not this time around?
No, I normally love going over to Europe for kind of the pro tournaments they do there, and they had so many more trick tournaments this year, so I was so disappointed to miss out on that. But ultimately, I chose to stay home in Florida and train, which I think was the right decision. It was definitely not the easiest decision, which is something I've learned, to compete and to achieve everything that you want to achieve, all your goals, it's definitely sacrifices play a major part in that. And of course, going to Europe would have been really fun, but I stayed home and I trained every single day leading up to the under 21 worlds, and that was important.
Yeah, that was definitely one of your key tournaments this season, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. But you have a little bit of affinity for Italy. You know, I see a few of your Instagram videos, and you've competed in the junior pro tournament. You know that when you were eligible to do so. So kind of speak to that a little bit, because I think this is I think your dad is a part Italian, is that right? Or maybe I got my wires crossed a
No,
little bit there.
actually, my mom. So, Europe in general, I feel pretty close to because both of my parents have European heritage, and I love Europe so much. I love all of my European friends, and of course, going there it's kind of like my happy place outside of home. But yeah, Italy in particular, both my grandparents on my mom's side are Italian. And so I've gone there quite a few times to visit some family. And my dad also works with an Italian company. So we've gone over there to visit the headquarters there. So I do spend quite a bit of time in Italy. Every time I go to Europe, I'm generally in Italy for a bit. And I also love skiing over at San Gervasio. I got the opportunity to go to Richetto this summer, which we can talk more about when we get towards the end of the season. But
Oh, yeah.
yeah, everything about Italy is a lot of fun always, and skiing over there, and of course the food is amazing, and all of the things, all of the people and everything.
You can get a little bit bogged down with the food there over in Italy. You're kind of forgetting a little bit while you're there for starters. But I mean, it's but yeah, that's what I found anyway. I mean, get off the pasta, get off the carbs. Anyway, but let's roll into the U21 Worlds, which took place in Canada, Lakes of Castingstone, Predator Bay, all that kind of stuff. So, on home turf, as it were, you know. So obviously there was a good deal of pressure, to perform on home ground. So, kind of give us a little bit of a summary of how things went there, because you came out on top in the in the women's trick world championship. Spoiler alert.
Yeah, spoiler alert. Definitely. So that was obviously an incredible experience, and I've been to Predator Bay a few times before. We've had nationals there and some other tournaments, so I have gotten to compete there, but it had been quite a while because I wasn't eligible to compete in the junior worlds there the summer before. I was 1 year aged out, so it had been probably 3 or 4 years since I'd skied there, but it kind of just came right back. And definitely there was some pressure, but at the same time, pressure is privilege, and pressure is a privilege, and that's something that I don't take for granted. But a little nugget of Matt geniusness to put into that preparation was I was kind of skiing really good towards the start of the summer, and then there was a couple of weeks there where I felt pretty unprepared, and it at the on one of I think it was the last day or the day before that, I skied pretty good when I was in Florida, and I said to Matt, I said, "Oh, finally." And he said, "There's no finally, there's perfect timing." And it was true. Everything had come together in perfect timing, and clearly he had planned for that, 'cause he makes all these plans that he doesn't necessarily always tell us, but he has these plans and they usually tend to work out. So, he had this plan, I guess, and it all came together kind of right at the right moment. And then we traveled over to Calgary, and we got there. I actually missed my flight. I didn't miss it, but there was a problem at the airport, so my flight was moved the next day, and I was stressed about that. But ooh. I stayed calm. Kind of everything was a little bit stressful, but I stayed really calm, and I definitely was in the mindset of I'm ready, but everything happens for a reason. And if this happens, I'd like this to happen, but if it doesn't happen, I'm also okay. And that's definitely something that I learned from not qualifying for the Masters. I was more heartbroken over that. And so I had to think to myself, okay, if I would like this to go as planned, and I'm going to do everything in my power for it to go as planned, but if it doesn't, I'm okay. I'm okay with either outcome. And this is something also I've learned from Matt and Cole and everyone else over there. So I was definitely in that mindset. I had a couple of days of training up in Canada, and they all went relatively well. Not everything was perfect, but it all went relatively well. And then getting into the tournament, I was definitely feeling ready, but okay with any outcome.
All right, then. So as we continue to go into the tournament itself, you know, you made it out the first round, you made it through to the final. You know, the world's top U21 trickers in all of the world. I mean, you've got the likes of Lexi, Daniela, and yourself among many others. Took a little while to determine that you had won the world title, because a little bit of controversy kind of ensued there a little bit. Give us an idea of what was going through your mind at that point. I mean, because I mean, it wasn't any of your fault or anything that you did, but it was stuff that was completely out of your control that was going to ultimately decide whether you won the world title or whether someone else did, you know?
Yeah. So as you said, I made it through the first round. The first round felt awesome. Everything felt like super smooth. I even said, I posted a video on my Instagram and I said, that was probably one of the most fun tournaments that I've ever had. That's really how it felt. And then the second, the final round, I everything becomes a blur for me, at least after. So kind of from the dock on until after I skied is, again, like I said, a blur. But I did fall on my last trick in hands, which wasn't ideal, because that 550 points would have been really helpful in that case. But it ended up working out. The judging, as many people know, was definitely looking at everything extra carefully at the under 21 worlds. And so everything had to be very precise and as perfect as possible. And that's what I went into that final round thinking, because I did get cut on a couple tricks in the prelims, even though I felt pretty smooth. So like I said, it was a blur, but yeah, so into the final round, I was trying to be as precise as possible. And then after I skied, after I fell, I said, you know, that was great. That felt good. I'm happy with it. I wasn't top seed, so I hadn't known what anybody else had done yet, or there were a couple before me, but not the last two. So I was kind of like, you know, I did my best. I did everything I could. Toes was great. Most of hands was great. I fell. I'm happy. I'm at the worlds. It's okay. And I came off the water, and then the score came out, and I'd scored, I don't remember exactly what it was, but I think it was around 7,500 points. And I said, you know, that's actually not bad. And then the score, I heard the score from the couple before me, and I knew that my score was a little bit higher than that. And so I said, wow, I'm shocked. Cause at first I said, okay, I fell, I did my best. I'm going to walk away with pride. Right. Mm-hmm. And then as I was watching the last two, I realized, well, like, I'm still in this. So then I watched the last two skiers, and they skied very well, but I was sitting on pins and needles, because it takes 15 minutes or so between me finding my score and between the last two even skiing. And then it took a minute or two even after until I got the last two scores. But of course, I was very nervous and very excited, and it was the greatest and worst moment of my life, pretty much. It's, you know, if you've been in that scenario, you know what it feels like. But it's not the first time that I've felt something like that at the Worlds in Chile, the Junior Worlds. It also took quite a while to get my score.
On top of the fact that you have to wait 30 minutes anyway when the pink sheets go out, as I say, the drama isn't restricted to the water. It could well be decided elsewhere, you know.
Definitely. So yeah, like you said, it took probably 2 hours to have a confirmation in Chile, and then in Canada was a little bit longer. I was trying to remain calm, but of course, it's, you know, the world title is on the line, so it's definitely nerve-wracking.
You're even trying to remain calm now, and it's definitely I can definitely hear it in the voice.
Yeah, I feel how I felt again, but like I said, I really was okay with either outcome, and so I said I'm gonna leave it up to the judges. Ultimately, they make the final decision. Things were a little bit chaotic. There was a lot going on. I tried to remain, you know, as separated as possible from everything that was happening. And ultimately, I think that whatever the judges decide is what is obviously going to be stuck with. And we have to accept that. And it's, for me, I'm grateful that it went my way this time. But there's also been times that it went the other way. And that's something that you have to kind of accept. And so it was nice that it went my way, but I would have been, I guess, okay if it hadn't. But yeah, every single, there were a lot of tricks that were given or taken for that whole, you know, tournament, boys and girls in prelims and finals, every single one. And so, yeah, ultimately it was a lot of controversy. But at the end of the day, I'm very close friends with all of my top competitors, and I respect all of them, so I have nothing bad to say about the experience.
All right, then. So you've at that point, you snagged your first year U21 World Women's Trick title on home water in Canada. So beyond that point, you'd already achieved one of the goals that you set for yourself at the beginning of the season. Now we work towards the end of the season and midsummer, that type of stuff, and look towards the World Elite Championships, which took place in Richetta, a site that you hadn't been to before, from what you just told me.
Yeah, so actually before that, about 11 days after the Under 21 Worlds, I was in Paraguay for the Junior Pan Am.
Oh, yeah, of course. I kind of forgot a little bit about that. Yeah. I don't know whether you're eligible to ski, but I mean, I know I saw you at the Worlds, and
yeah,
you were in Paraguay, yeah.
Yeah, so that August was a busy month, but I did get to go over to Paraguay. That was a lot of fun. That was an exciting tournament. You know, getting to visit the Olympic Village for the first time was something that I've always dreamed of and something really cool. And it was definitely a different experience for me. I feel that it was completely different to any tournament I've ever skied in, but it was just as great. At that tournament, like I said, sometimes it goes your way, sometimes it doesn't. I was happy I got a podium, but I did place third, so it wasn't
swings and roundabouts, you know.
I'm sorry?
Swings and roundabouts, you know, one high,
yeah,
one low.
Exactly.
You know.
But especially when you've got a couple people at the top who are all very up there and competitive with each other, and, you know, competing super well and pushing out great scores, it's definitely hard to win every time, you know, so you gotta take some and lose some. But I was really happy with how I skied, and at the end of the day, a bronze medal is nothing to be ashamed about.
Indeed. And you said the first time that you've ever been in a kind of Olympic Village, a kind of setup. Now from stories that I heard before, from skiers that have experienced that type of thing, like Pan American Games and what have you. You know, the skiers generally hung out with athletes from some other sports as well. Was it the same here? Who did you guys hang out with mostly in the village?
Yeah, so I was mostly with the Canadian team of skiers whenever we went to the village, because we kind of traveled there together. Obviously, I hung out with all of the skiers, and there was also wakeboarders at that event. So all of the skiers and wakeboarders that there were. But I spent some time. We went and watched the diving, so I hung out with some of the divers, and then there was rugby. Or handball. There was some
sevens,
sport.
Sevens, probably.
I don't remember what sport, but there was also a couple of the teams when I went into the athlete lounge and the recovery center that I, you know, struck up some conversation with. So it was fun. It was cool. It was definitely a great experience to meet people from different sports and learn a little bit about theirs. But yeah, that was good. And then from Paraguay, I took a plane straight over to Italy. Got there just in time for official practice, so that was an experience in itself.
What was it like dealing with the stress in not only of the actual flight itself, but also dealing with some rather harsh jet lag from South America all the way up to northern Italy?
Yeah, so I do usually pretty okay with jet lag. I try to. Whenever I'm going somewhere where I know, like, for example, when I just went to Europe a couple weeks ago, and when I went there, I went to bed as early as possible the last 2 or 3 days before I left, and then tried to get on that sleep schedule as soon as possible. So that's kind of what I try to do all of the time, especially if I'm going to a tournament. But yeah, so honestly, for me, Open Worlds this year was not major pressure. I wanted to make the finals because I did do that at my first Open Worlds the two years before that. But I was kind of just like, it's the end of the season. I was pretty tired by that point, a little bit burnt out from everything. And so, because not that after the Junior Worlds, I relaxed, but I kind of mentally checked out a little bit, and that's something I definitely have to learn from for the future, because we do have tournaments back to back all the time. But yeah, so definitely was just trying to kind of stand up my runs and see what I can do. And I don't know why, but I struggled for some reason with the back to front, the half cab this year quite a bit. And I ended up falling on that at the Worlds and just missed out on the finals. I think I placed 13th, but yeah.
Well, sometimes that happens, and also something that happens is that a podcast is so good that we have to make it a two-parter. So with that, we'll rejoin Hannah Stopnik in part two of her TWBC podcast episode, and just keep on the lookout for that. But for now, it is ciao for now.
Thank you, Tony.
Thank you for listening to the TWBC podcast. Be sure to check out our website at waterskibroadcasting.com. Links to our presence on major social media platforms can be found there, as well as updates to our webcast and this podcast. Duplication or rebroadcasting of this broadcast without written consent of TWBC is prohibited. Subscribe to us on your favorite podcast platform and be sure to join us next time for the next edition of the TWBC podcast.